And tonight's speaker has an introduction from Dave, which is always a relief and also a lovely sign of the level of community we can find in here.
I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic. Proud member of the alumni group in Athens, Georgia. If you're ever in that area Wednesday or Sunday, please come join us. We could always use some more folks that want to stay sober. I met Ricky about 6.5 years ago, and we've become friends pretty quick. And 4 years ago, he asked me to be his sponsor. But I'll tell you, you know, I've been here for a while, and I've sponsored hundreds of guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've only had a handful of guys that was willing to do the work and put in the work and do these steps to not pick up a drink of liquor and have a life beyond their wildest dreams. And that's Ricky. He's called me every day. We might have missed one or two days in the last, 4 years or whatever, but pretty much every day for the last 4 years, we've been on the phone together and get together and do step work. And man, he keeps giving back to Alcoholics Anonymous and never says no to Alcoholics Anonymous and is real interested in what these steps can do for him. And, you know, me and my wife and him and his fiance have traveled to a few different countries and around the world together, really. We've had great times, man, to hear how he came in here and what happened and what he is today after getting arrested 96 times and being in jail and to be a productive member of society. Man, I'm so proud of you. You just keep doing this work, man, so we can keep living this beautiful life together. That's it. Come on up here, man. You got to come speak now. I'm Rick Gamm, alcoholic. My sobriety day is April 9th, 2016. You know, by all rights of county, I really shouldn't be standing here. Dave's right, I've been arrested over 100 times, or 96 times, that's 100 to me. So I was really doing a life sentence and doing it a little bit at a time and thought it was normal. But I was born in Hall County, Georgia, about 70 miles north of here. I'm thinking the further we go south, the further it is north. My mom raised two boys. And, my mom and dad had separated before I was, I don't remember when they separated. I just remember my mom raising two young boys. And if you'd asked me back then, I said we was poor. We were poor. But really, we wasn't poor. We had everything a person could want. We never went without food. We never went without clothes. We never went without power. We never went without water. And we always had a roof overhead. Now, the clothes that we would have to wear, I was the youngest, so I got the hand-me-downs. Might have come from a garage sale. Used stuff. But, and of course, we didn't know the difference between a middle class, high class, and low class. I just put us in the low class because that's what, we lived in trailers, and we moved a lot. You know what I'm saying? No reason to be sorry. No, but we moved around a lot. Mama done the best she could. That must be God calling. Got something to say to me. That's all right. Mama done the best she could. And I got to see my daddy on the weekends. Now, my daddy was a good daddy. Now, he was a weekend daddy, but, he was there. And on the weekends, when I'd go visit with him, we went to church with my granny every Sunday. And I was raised in church from the time I could walk up until I was able to tell him I didn't want to go anymore. By then I was not able to go anymore, if that makes any sense. At age 10, my mama never drank, never had alcohol in the house, never done drugs. If you were to, put pot or cocaine or anything in front of her, mama wouldn't know what that was. She'd never seen it before. At age 10, she met a guy, and he was a fireman, and he drank like a fish. And mama told him that if she wants to marry, they'd get married, he had to change because he had two boys to raise. And he quit drinking. He quit drinking, and so when they got together, there was still no alcohol in the house. Mama put her foot down, and he went with it. We moved to Knoxville, Tennessee when I was 10. Now, I was always a really good student in school. And I always made A's, always. Not A's and B's, but A's. And you know, I was one of them kids that never took a book home. And I never did homework. I'd do it in class or whatever. You know, the only problem I had in school was my conduct. You know, Mama knew when I got my report card what to expect. It was always a U and an F in conduct. But A's on everything else. But I'd always fail conduct. So what it was, I had a mouth on me. You know, I always had the last word, and I wanted to argue with the teacher. Always. And it's really, you know, if you're a failing student and you're not good in school, you ain't got a leg to stand on. But if you're making good grades, you can run your mouth. Or that's what I was, in my mind, I'm thinking. You know, I look back, that's how it was, but that's really not how it is. That's what I thought. So I always failed conduct, but I always made good grades. At age 10, we moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, because the fire department where my stepdad worked moved up there. So he moved up there with the chief and all. So we moved up there. I know you think, why are you telling me that? Well, what it is when I got there, the schools there were, man, they were two semesters ahead, maybe a year ahead. So at first it was hard on me to adapt, but once I did, it was on like Donkey Kong. I could do whatever I wanted to, start running my mouth, start doing whatever because I'm making good grades again. And then when we come back to Hall County, oh, it was even worse because now I'm two semesters ahead of all y'all. So that made my attitude even worse, I'm guessing, because my mouth still got me in trouble. When I was probably 17, I found out that my dad, the man that raised me all my whole life, was not my dad. There was a big talk, and my dad, the guy that I have his name, the guy that raised me, is my father, and I still talk to him today as my father. But I used that as an excuse, I think, when I found this out, to act out even more. Because now I got an excuse, you know what I'm saying, because y'all have lied to me all this time. And about this time is when I started going to North Hall High School. You know, I'd like to say that my drinking and using, that's where it started. I'm going to put it that way. Because that's where I found some guys that we would go out on the weekends. And, you know, I don't remember my first beer. I don't remember my first drunk. I don't remember my first high. I don't remember none of that. I just know it started is on the weekend things, us going out and drinking beer, you know. And doing other things. Well, if you're going to do them other things and drink beer, you got to have money. And so by now I'm 16. Let me back up. I was in a really bad car wreck, which broke my jaw here. And I was in a coma for a couple weeks. And I got some money in that settlement. You know, I'm going to make it quick and short. I got some money in that settlement. So I had money in my bank account to go get some dry goods or alcohol. So I was the locked guy because I had the money. Well, as a crowd of people I was hanging around, when that money ran out, we still had a habit we had to support. So there was about seven or eight of us that would go around and by now I'm drinking whenever I can and smoking whenever I can and putting in whatever my body, whatever I can when I can. We went around, we were breaking in cars, stealing stuff. We wouldn't sell them to people in school, but one of the guys that was with, he bought one of the radar detectors in school and sold it to another kid at school. A teacher finds out, and the next thing you know, I'm the first kid being escorted out of North Hall High School in handcuffs at 17 years old. looking at seven felonies at 17. And that's when my demise started. I'm going to say demise because that's when it all started. Because that's when, now I'm having to come up, well, my daddy got me out of jail, but he set up with a bail bondsman where I have to pay him X amount of money because he ain't paying it all. They tried the 28-day rehab, which, you know, I was introduced to AA back then, but I don't use that or say that because I don't remember it because I can't say it even happened because I really don't remember. The only thing I remember in that 28-day program was my counselor's name was Don Dill, and me and him learned how to play ping pong, and I remember beating him at ping pong and him slamming the table up and all, but I don't remember. I remember going to the Hawk Club back when there was smoke in the room, you know, but I don't remember anything about it, so I really can't say I was in AA back then. But I did try, I did go, but I didn't do anything there. But y'all, it wasn't long after that, I got a First Offenders Act, went to court, got a first offender, and so if I complete this first offender, these seven felonies would be off my record. I got probation 37 years later. I ain't kidding, 37 years later is when I got off probation at 47, 46, because it was always something. You know, from failed drug screens to stealing something at Walmart to, you know, when he said 96 times, you know, went and got my arrest record. That's the first thing you got to do to get your record back. So I got looking at 96 times is what I was arrested from the time. And I can't, you know, the different things I was arrested for, child support. Driving without license, name something. That's what I was arrested for. Over and over. Look, me and Gus was looking at it. I got a DUI. I didn't think I had but one DUI, 91 from a headlight out. Hell, I got two in there. I don't even know where I got the other one from. Don't even remember. That was my life, y'all. I mean, there have been many times, several times when I got that money. I bought a car at 5 o'clock that afternoon. At 11 o'clock that night, I wrapped it around a tree. You know what I'm saying? Less than 8 hours later, wrecked it. My daddy bought me a truck. I wrecked it the next day. He bought me a Datsun B210 because, you know, he's like, that was the first car I got was a Datsun B210, and daddy bought me the Datsun B210. I don't know if any of y'all know about Datsun B210s, but they ain't a good-looking ride. Okay? But Daddy done that because he knew I was going to wreck it. He knew this. And y'all, I wrecked that car. And I remember one time I was going up there to meet my mama and we was going to the swimming pool and I went around this curve and hit the stump and when I done that, it just warped the car so the car drove like this. And so when we drove up to the swimming pool, mama standing up there at the fence looking, what'd you do? Daddy just got you that. Oh, and she just went off on me. I'm sorry, wrecked the car. And she called my daddy, want my daddy to be mad at me. And the only thing daddy would ask is Ricky okay? He didn't care about the car. Y'all wrecked so many cars. I can sit here and tell you the stories of cars I've wrecked. And, 10, 12, 13, I don't know how many cars I wrecked in total. There's always something, man. And I was either, if I wasn't drinking or getting high at the time, I was probably headed that way. But there's a good chance I probably was. When I was 29, my girlfriend at the time, me and her, actually she was the girl I met that was the drug dealer girl, and me and her hooked up, and we were together. She moved in my house, and she got pregnant, and all we could think about at this time, because we'd been using dry goods pretty heavy, drinking pretty heavy, getting messed up pretty regular, that we're going to have a deformed kid, you know what I'm saying, because, I mean, there's no way he can come out not deformed, you know what I'm saying? So we went to have an abortion, and on the way down there, this is a God thing, man. She put some gum in her mouth, and when we got down there, they wouldn't do the abortion. So we come back to Gainesville. I went and got the money orders made out to the abortion clinic. Give her the money orders to go get the abortion and sent her on her way. Now, I grew up in church, so in my mind, I'm thinking I killed this kid. So anything, any of y'all anything, know anything about overhead welding? Y'all know cornbread? Y'all know it's overhead welding? Y'all know what that is? Okay, I smoked crack one time for 7 months. I'm going to put it like that. Because what it is, the alcohol and the other drugs that I was doing could not drown out that pain of what I'd done, so I could go up another level, okay, and I could smoke all I wanted to and forget about this, because I killed a kid, and it was a big thing at that time to me. And I say that then one time for 7 months, because 7 months later, I get a knock at the door, and I open the door, and it's Nikki standing there, big as a barrel. She didn't have the abortion now. How she cashed that and kept the money orders, I have no idea, but she didn't have the abortion. So now I got a kid on the way, and my life is still normal, because I'm going to tell you what my life is normal, because I thought what I was doing was normal. My life wasn't unmanageable. There was nothing wrong with my life. I just didn't, I had some really bad luck. You know what I'm saying? There's out to get me. I know y'all have all had that feeling, just bad luck, but my life wasn't unmanageable. I thought it was normal to keep going back to Hall County Jail, be sent to B-74 every time. It's the same bed, same bunk everywhere. When I'd leave, they'd say, "We'll see when you come back." I'm like, "Man, I ain't coming back." 2 weeks later, I'm back. Day after tomorrow, I'm back. 3 months, I mean, it was a revolving door. This is what I done, revolving door. But anyway, so now I got a kid because she moved in. But y'all wouldn't, man, if any of y'all got little ones, they watching, you know, they watching. And, you know, all the times, of course, I got to be a weekend father, too. You know what I'm saying? I was a weekend father because, you know, she went her way, so I'd get him on weekends. So on weekends, I would go get him, drinking every time, smoking every time, doing dope every time I went and got him. Was not a healthy relationship. But, you know, what does he know? He's little. But, y'all, my life went running rampant like that for, started when I was 17. Now I'm in my 30s. And now I'm getting drug charges. I'm getting big boy charges, felony charges. Now I'm doing a little bit more time when I go to jail. You know, the whole time, now I'm going to jail for child support. Because you can't pay child support because you're in jail or you're too messed up. You can't go to work. So now I'm going for driving on suspended license, child support. And you got to stay in there for child support until you get the money to get out. You know, so I was in work release. I can't count the times. I don't know how many times I was in work release. I have no idea. I could probably count them, but if I had to go through them paperwork, which I ain't done, but that's just something else I get to go to jail for. And y'all, them kids remember that. I got a 26-year-old that I'm still paying for. Emotionally, even though we have mended our relationships, you know, it still hurts. I still get reminded of it. You know, he ain't got a program that he can forgive folks and stuff like we got. He's still one of them normal people because we're not normal. But he's one of them people. You know what I'm saying? And y'all, here's a. You know, I can sit here and tell y'all I have a drunk log of hundreds of times I got in trouble and make it funny and make y'all laugh. And it was fun and all. Look, because I ain't going to lie to y'all, I had some good times getting high, getting drunk. Going to Lowry's at Nickel Night with a $2 roll of nickels and coming out slammed and still having some change in your pocket and going and getting in a fight and waking up where somebody done flipped you and you ain't got your wallet and you're broke now. You only do it. I've had that happen. I can tell you only how many times. I can tell you all these good times I had. And it was all really good at first. You know what I'm saying? Till when it wasn't. But I could sit here and tell you more and more. But I'm going to tell you these last. I'm going to get to something here now. So the time before last I went to jail, I done 18 months on a possession with intent charge. Now, you think when you get out of jail for, actually, they give me 3 years, and then I thought I was going down the road. But when I come back to the cell, a few minutes later, they called my name and released me. I they done messed up. But what was it? They give me 2 for 1. My 3 years is up. They let me out. So now I've had 18 months to think about what I've done to get me here, right? I mean, what are you going to do when you get out? You're going to do right now because you've done 18 months in county jail. You've done 2 Christmases. You've done 2 Easter, 2 Thanksgiving. I mean, what else you got? I mean, you're the librarian in the jail now. You've been there so long. Y'all, within an hour out of getting out of that jail after doing 18 months, I was back doing the same thing. It took me time to walk up to the hill, to the Waffle House, make a phone call, smoke part of a cigarette, and my dealer shows up. I walk out there, and he's like, man, he said, I got to go get this car. You go help me? He's sitting there. He's got a bag full of dope in his lap, got a beer sitting right here and a bowl in his hand. And I was like, hell yeah. Off to the races again. Now, I ain't got no license. Okay? I'm supposed to go see my probation officer tomorrow, you know? And I know if I do this, what's about to happen. But I do it anyway. And, y'all, that worked out good for, hell, 3 months. That's 3 months later. I'm back in Forsyth County Jail now, this time for the same charge. Well, a lot of times you get 2 intent charges, that's prison time. You're going to prison. But when I was in Forsyth County, I heard these people talking about rehab. That's what I need, rehab. What I need rehab for, because if I go to rehab, I ain't going to prison. It ain't going to rehab to get sober. But if I go to rehab, I can avoid going to prison. So that's what we decided to do. But by now, you know, I've already burnt every bridge I got, you know what I'm saying? But I had one aunt that had had a lot of hope in me. And she went around and collected some money and got me in the Favor House. I don't know if you know anything about the Favor House. Anybody know anything about the Potter's House? This is one step down from the Potter's House. Okay? Probably the hardest rehab besides the Potter's House I've ever heard of. And I deal with a bunch of them in Athens. They got a lot of freedom. Favor House ain't got no freedom like that. But what I told that, we were sitting in that little room right there, and I told my lawyer, I was like, yeah, I'll go to the Favor House. I said, heck, if I don't like it, I'll just go to another one. He said, hold on just a minute, Mr. George. He goes out and comes back in. All right, let's go. So we go out there, and that judge, he said, he mandates you 12 months to the Favor House. If you leave this program, Mr. Gerard, you're going to prison. And what my lawyer had done is he went out there and told the judge what I said. I know this for a fact, y'all. I wasn't there, but he went in there and told that judge to make sure I stay at that rehab, and I can't leave that rehab because of what I told him. That was a God moment because I hadn't stayed. If I had not been to that rehab and had to stay at that rehab, I wouldn't be standing here today. Because I could have went to that rehab and changed to another rehab, went to the Hope House, went to ARC, went to Modern Pathways, went to different programs in Athens to give you enough rope to hang yourself. And that's what I'd have done. I'd have hung myself if I'd have went to another rehab. I was at a rehab, but the only time you left that rehab was to go to work, to church, and to a meeting. You was there 90 days before you even got any kind of a pass. You was there 9 months before you went on an overnight pass. Real strict, real strict. Strict. And seen hundreds come and go, y'all. Hundreds come and go. I mean, I used to keep up with them. You know, the people would come and go, come and go, come and go, come and go. I've seen it over and over and over and over. Even people that were threatened with prison like I was, because they wasn't scared of prison. They'd been there before. I seen it, y'all. People was coming and go. Well, my mouth showed me in elementary school I wouldn't have been a good candidate in prison. You know, because I got a mouth on me. I wouldn't have done any good there. Y'all, Favor House took me to a bunch of meetings. We used to go to meetings every day somewhere, our church. And, at this point, I'd still not decided. Right? That's even wrong. I had no intentions of getting sober. I had no intentions of getting sober, y'all. I was going to go to the favor house. I was going to do my 12 months. And I'm going back to Gainesville because I got stuff in Gainesville. You know what I'm saying? I got a couch I was living on at my buddy's house because that's where I was living. I got a couch. I got some tools out there in this building that we probably stole. I got clientele there. I got a job there. You know what I'm saying? That's what my plan was, is to do 12 months, go back to Gainesville. Yeah, I don't know. Y'all talk about bright light moments and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if this is a bright light moment or not, but we kept going to alumni. I don't know if any of y'all know about alumni, but that's my home group now that Dave mentioned. That's our home group. And I remember coming out of there one night, and I looked back, and there's a whole room full of people still standing in there that wasn't there getting their paper signed. Standing there talking happy, joyous, and free. They were happy, joyous, and free. And none of them had to be there. And here's what I thought about them people. Damn, y'all ain't got a life. You ain't nothing else y'all be doing. You know, why y'all at them meeting? And that's what my thoughts are, y'all. Today, I'm that guy. Okay, I'm going to get finished my story, but today, I'm that guy. I'm the guy that gets early and stays late. And if you ask me if I got a life, I'll tell you I got a good life. I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world. But I look back and I've seen all them people like that. And some just, I can't explain it. But I wanted what they had. So when I got out of rehab, I kept doing exactly what I was doing while I was in rehab. I kept going to the meeting house. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I got into service work. And that's what I kept doing when I got out of rehab. I kept doing the same thing, y'all. Today, you know, I do a lot of service work, and I ain't trying to brag to y'all, but I do all I can. And whenever service work is offered, I'm going to do it. It don't matter what it is, whether it be come down here and speak, whether it be put up with Jeff Wise stuff on the cook's crew, or go to the clubhouse, whatever. Service work is a big part of my sobriety. And, you know, I got a life today, man. It's just crazy. You know, if I sit here and told you all the stuff that I got, material things, cars, property. We just got back from Alaska. I've been on 5 cruises in a year and a half, 2 years. You know, I got season's tickets from Georgia Bulldogs, and I got all this stuff. I can tell you all this stuff I got, which I have. But what's more important to me than anything is, you know, my daddy. And I used to call my daddy up, and if he answered the phone, if he answered, it was just, what do you want? Because he knows that's what I'm calling for. Today I called him not long ago, or 4 Father's Day, I went up there, and I could hear a joy in his voice when I call. I can hear him say, "Hey, bud, how you doing?" And with an upbeat voice, like he wants me in his life. Now, I got a fiance now. When we first got together, it wasn't like that. She hears it in my daddy's voice. My daddy wants me to be around in his life. My brother asked me to come to Christmases now. I'm asked to be there. I'm wanted there instead of not being there. I'm wanted to be there. So that's what, you know, all the material things is important, sure. But what's really more important is a peace of mind that I have that my son and my dad and my brothers, they want me around in their life. I got cousins. I got a group of guys, man, that's crazy that I can call today. I got 3 of them sitting right here. I got a group of guys, man, I get to travel with. I get to do stuff with. AA is my life. You know, AA is a designed way of living. Friday night, this man right here spoke. We was at his thing speaking. We want to support him. If Gus goes somewhere and speaks, I go with him. If Dave was to go, I'd go with him. You know, every 8 weeks or so, me and Gus go to Serenity Grove and we speak. And I love doing that, y'all. You know, it ain't something I got to do, but it's something I love to do. And that's what AA has done for me, y'all. AA has given me a life beyond what I think I deserved, for sure. And all the promises are still coming true in my life. I hope y'all got something out of that, man. Love y'all. Love AA.
First I slip, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise is. All is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get this what we need. On a broad highway, God wants us, we walk eternally. Take me where the promise is.